Campus 103.7 presents a collaboration between me, Patricia Salomone, and my friend Stephen Mangione for the reviewing of the book The Path to Redemption, A Journey to the End of the Earth by Stephen Mangione. This is another review in the series A Book, A Thousand Stories. For several days, Maria and James walked together through the meseta. Flat ground, open skies, endless fields of corn and flocks of sheep, on their way to the royal city of León. They had both started to develop problems in their feet and calf muscles. At one of their stops, in Villar de Mazarife, Pepe, the owner of the hostel they were staying at, fancied himself as a physiotherapist, and when Maria asked him for help with her painful calf muscles, he was very ready to oblige, and he worked the miracle.
Pilgrims walking the Camino may sometimes start to develop problems, primarily in their feet and calf muscles. Blisters are a common occurrence and tend to start developing after a few days of heavy walking. It is necessary to treat these straight away as they can sometimes become septic. Calf muscles are also at risk, as they tend to bear the brunt of the strain involved, as do one's knees, especially with long and steep descents. Part of the infrastructure that was developed around the Camino is the network of state health centers, the Centros de Salud. There are some 10,000 of them all over Spain, and they provide an efficient and effective service. The ones on the Camino are very much geared up to treating pilgrims' ills. I have on occasions had to refer to them for help, and I always found them to be very helpful indeed. Thanks to the European Health Card, all treatment in these health centers is free.
James and Maria became so engrossed in one another that they were not particularly interested in conversing with the pilgrims that they met on their way. They did, however, make conversation with Julia, a young German woman, who broke down in tears, saying that she was seeking atonement as she felt guilty for her mother's suicide. She felt she had not done enough to prevent this tragic event. Of course, this struck a note in Maria's conscience, for, as we know, she too could not forgive herself for not having done enough to prevent her mother's tragic death. As for James, of course, the guilt feelings again surface in his mind. He cannot forgive himself for having abandoned the old lady on the road after the accident. His cowardly act continues to haunt him.
Thank you.
Maria's presence has brought some joy into his life, a new feeling he never experienced before. And he's quite aware that Maria too has the same feelings. On arrival at Leon early in the evening, he came up with a bright idea. He suggested that they check into the Parador, a luxury hotel which, he felt, they deserved after having roughed it for so long. Maria was reticent, because she feared the hotel was too costly. But may I suggest that instead of booking two rooms, let's save money and just get one, Maria said, with a twinkle in her eye. The Parador Hotel at Leon belongs to the Parador chain of five-star hotels. It is housed in a historic building, the Hostal de San Marcos, built in the 16th century. But Stephen can tell us more.
The first building on the site was commissioned by the Infanta Sancha of Castile in 1152. The Infanta is the daughter of the king, but she is not the heir to the throne. It was to be a place where the poor of Christ, as she put it, could stay. These were the pilgrims walking the Camino to Santiago. The original building was demolished and replaced in the 16th century by Ferdinand and Isabel, Los Reyes Católicos, so called because of their devotion to the Catholic faith. They established the Inquisition and saw the final expulsion of the Moors from Spain. The building housed a convent of friars and was known as the Convento de San Marcos. It is one of the Renaissance jewels of León, indeed of Spain, and it contains a church and a museum, and now houses one of the top paradors of Spain. During the Spanish Civil War of 1936-1939, it was used as a concentration camp for political prisoners by Franco's forces, and some 20,000 prisoners passed through its doors. Fortunately, this black period in its history is now largely forgotten.
The hotel is busy and quite full, but luckily a room is made available, and James and Maria are shown to this splendid room overlooking the garden. The room turned out to be a dream. It was very large, with a timber ceiling, a floor that was paved in beautiful parquet, walls panelled in wood and heavy wooden doors. Light flooded in through two windows, and the large canopied bed had an impressive ornate headboard. Having walked so many kilometers, both badly needed a refreshing shower. Maria used the luxury bathroom first, and while he waited for her, James looked out of the window. The garden they overlooked was a peaceful green oasis in the city. It was very well manicured without losing its natural look. The green of the trees complemented the honey-colored stone in the grand arcade that ran around all four sides of the garden. He heard Maria singing softly in her shower, and he listened in delight. Their relationship had grown close, and it was evident to him that she, as much as he, wished to take it further. He always felt a great desire for her, and it was apparent that she felt the same way. Thank you. she emerged from the bathroom, wrapped in the white toweling robe, her hair wet and her smiling face flushed, he had to make a big effort to stop himself from picking her up in his arms and laying her on the bed. Maria sensed this and coyly said, "Your turn now, James. Off you go for your shower so we can go and get the great dinner you promised me." They descended the grand staircase to the foyer. They admired the beautiful tapestries adorning the walls. The foyer was crowded with tourists, but as they walked into the garden, they discovered an oasis of peace, complete with the refreshing sound of water at a fountain and the smell of orange blossom in the air. They sat on one of the benches in a little corner, and they were completely alone. James put his arms around Maria and pulled her close to him. Before they knew it, they were kissing gently and then hungrily, behaving like young lovers, but aware that they must control their emotions, they sat down to dinner in the grand dining room.
The food in Spain varies from region to region, with one major division being whether it is based on rural or marine produce. Some of the most typical dishes are tortilla de patatas, which is a Spanish-style omelette, which, as the name suggests, includes potatoes, gazpacho, a cold tomato-based soup, cocido madrileño, a dish made with legumes typical of Madrid, paella, a rice-based dish with seafood, chicken, and other ingredients, bacalao al pilpil, which is cod in a hot pepper or garlic sauce, empanadas, little pies filled with different ingredients. In the region of Galicia, where Santiago is situated, the typical dishes include a variety of different seafoods, called mariscos in Spanish, pulpo octopus, and pimientos de padrón, which are grilled mini bell peppers. There are, of course, the great hams of Spain, reaching their climax in the jamón de bellota or pata negra, obtained from black Iberian pigs, which are fed on acorns, as well as the great variety of tapas and pinchos.
The dining room in the Parador at León, the author tells us, was a grand room with a high vaulted ceiling and more tapestries hanging on the walls. The lighting was soft, creating a relaxed, intimate atmosphere. Our protagonists talked little while they ate, both thinking of what was to come. It was the ideal atmosphere for James and Maria to declare their love, both explaining that since they met at Logroño, their lives seemed to have changed. James tells Maria she is the one person he has always wished to be with. She told him in no hidden way that she felt the same way and wished to express it in the most natural and most giving way. We can imagine that it was a dinner full of anticipation. As they climbed the grand staircase up to their room, Maria felt she was floating up the stairs. James fumbled to find the key to open the door and push it shut behind them. James lifted her up in his arms and put her onto the bed. Thank you. So the author tells us how here, in the grand bedroom at the Parador Hotel in Leon, Maria and James made love passionately, slowly, and deliberately until they came together. And finally, lying down side by side, they fell asleep. Very early next morning, Maria was the first to wake up when the moonlight still filtered through the Persian blinds. She felt a sense of peace and clearly recalled her feelings of bliss just before falling asleep. And when James opened his eyes, he said, "I love you, Maria." And drawn inexorably together, they again made love while the birds started singing and nature came to life out in the garden. Maria could not help comparing this magic moment to the scene in Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet, when the young Juliet tries to delay Romeo's departure after the night of lovemaking.
Wilt thou be gone? It is not yet near day. It was the nightingale and not the lark that pierced the fearful hollow of thine ear. Nightly she sings on yon pomegranate tree. Believe me, love, it was the nightingale.
It was the lark, the herald of the moon. No, nightingale. Look, love, what envious streaks do lace the severing clouds in yonder east. Night's candles are burnt out, and Jocundé stands tiptoe on the misty mountain tops. I must be gone and live, or stay and die.
We all know the sad story of the young star-crossed lovers, but James and Maria are two adults who do not seem to have any obstacles to their love. They linger in bed whispering love words, and when they go down to breakfast, both tell each other how neither expected the Camino to bring such a change in their lives. Both are unaware of the obstacle that will stand between them. Before they continue their walk to their new destination, both Maria and James wish to see more of the city of Leon. Perhaps our author can tell us something about the main buildings.
The Basilica of San Isidoro in Leon dates back to the early 10th century, when a monastery was built on the site. In 1063, the basilica was dedicated to San Isidoro, who had been Archbishop of Seville, and the celebrated academic of Visigoth, Spain, prior to the Arab invasion. It is mostly in Romanesque style, although there were later additions. It contains the pantheon of the kings of León. Here, the kings and queens of the royal house of León are buried. León Cathedral is dedicated to the Virgin Mary. It is known as Pulcra Leonina, which means beautiful Leonese. It is a supreme example of Gothic architecture, where the walls have been reduced to the minimum, to be replaced by stained glass. In fact, it has one of the largest and most beautiful collections of medieval stained glass in the world, with the majority dating from the 13th to the 15th century. It is the last of three cathedrals that were built on the site. Its architect, Master Enrique, had previously worked on Burgos Cathedral. He was French, and the design of León Cathedral was inspired by the layout of Reims Cathedral, which was well known to Master Enrique. Extensive repairs and restoration works were carried out between the 17th and the 19th centuries, until it was reopened in 1901. Attached to it is a very beautiful cloister on two floors, surrounding a large internal courtyard by the side of the cathedral. 6 years ago, I had the great pleasure of singing in this beautiful cathedral, together with my choir, the St. Paul Choral Society. We were on a singing tour following the route of the Camino, except that, of course, on that occasion, we were not walking the way.
Pilgrims, having seen these two famous buildings, a visit to the Barrio Humedo, the old city center, was a must which the hotel receptionist had recommended. To their surprise, the old town center was bustling with life, rather unusually for Spanish towns which normally come alive at night. James and Maria sat at a bar sipping a coffee and planning their next walk to Astorga, the next city on their route. Our two lovers prepare to leave the city of León to proceed on their walk towards Santiago de Compostela and beyond to Finisterre, Land's End. Our author gives us yet another idyllic description of the countryside. Beautiful, with gently rolling hills, well-tended fields and large clusters of eucalyptus trees, while in the big ground were the Montes de León, where they would reach the highest point of the Camino. We have reached the end of this episode. Next week we shall see how James and Maria's adventure proceeds, as unknown to both, dark clouds shadow the horizon of their newly found love. author Stephen Manjon and I thank students Emma Charlene Kassar and Stefan Galia, both students from the Department of Theatre Studies here at Malta University, for lending their voices to Juliet and Romeo in this episode of the Review of the Path to Redemption. This episode will be repeated on Campus 103.7 at 15 hours on Thursday, while the next episode will go on air next Monday at 18:30 hours. Until then, dear listeners, goodbye.